You're listening to the Youth Crit Podcast on KHZ Network.
With soap?
Find us on Facebook at DecibelUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at DecibelUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network.
I did. So, are we going to talk about it?
What?
The elephant in the room.
What elephant?
Mom's new job.
It's time to make some wrong things right. Help me bring supers back into the sunlight. We need to change people's perceptions about superheroes, and Elastigirl is our best play.
Better than me?
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Podcast.
I'm your host, Kel Smith. With me today is Dan
Doherty.
There you go.
And today we are talking about The Incredibles 2. Or
I guess it's now on Letterboxd and IMDb, Incredibles 2.
Yeah, there's no the.
It is until you hear Brad Bird's explanation for it. You know, he says, it's called Terminator 2 for a reason. You don't call Terminator 2 the Terminator 2. So, you know, I guess he has a point, but still. But Incredibles 2, it's a fun family movie. Pixar has kind of done it again. I say kind of because Pixar movies out there. That's just what happens when you have 12-15 years of just being the gold standard.
So
it's hard to live up to that previous 12 or 15 year gold standard that you used to have. So with that, Dan, what did you think of Incredibles 2?
I enjoyed it much more than I was expecting to. I did not like any of the trailers, and I had a huge fear that it would just be a cash grab type movie, but I actually really enjoyed it. There's not much going on emotionally or thematically that puts it on the level of the first one, but it's still an entertaining time, I'd say.
Yeah, I agree, because I didn't hate the trailers. I just saw it, okay, there's something they're trying to, you know, they're kind of underplaying the movie, because I felt like the marketing campaign was just like, coming summer 2018, mm-hmm. Be sure to check it out. That's kind of which is fine, like that's totally fine. I, you know, knowing everything before I see a movie, hence Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. I the trailers didn't bother look like, okay, maybe we're in for a Cars 3 Finding Dory situation. Not saying those movies are bad, but
they're bad.
Do we really remember, or do we really fair? Okay, but still, did we really need them? Did we really want them at all? Did we really want more of Cars Land? Did we really want to explore that world more? Like, did we really? No, I don't think so. But I thought Incredibles 2 was a really good sequel, and I thought Brad Bird really brought it this time around. And I thought, you know, it was entertaining. I liked kind of the progression of the characters, particularly Bob as a character. That, you know, being incredible doesn't mean you stop a monorail and get almost half of the people on the monorail killed, but you still save them anyway. Like, it's him realizing, oh, it's also incredible to be a parent. It's incredible to be the one superhero strong guy in the room. And so I really thought that was really compelling. yeah, I thought it was a really good movie. We'll get into kind of the villain stuff in a little bit when we get into the spoiler section. But other than that, I thought it was a really good sequel. So without getting into spoilers too quickly, what specifics did you like of Incredibles 2?
My favorite parts were definitely seeing Bob Parr, Mr. Incredible, try and adjust to being the stay-at-home dad, dealing with, like you see in the trailer, Dash doesn't know how to do his math homework, and Jack-Jack's running amok. And like, I thought those were the most compelling elements of the movie. And that was also where the emotional core came through the most, even though it's not super strong. But, like, that half of the movie, like if you split the movie into two halves, one half being that and the other half being Elastigirl's endeavors with being a hero in the public again, I think that the Mr. Incredible side is the much more interesting part of the movie.
Yeah, well, I think the reason that is because we can kind of predict where the screen slayer or slaver is going to go. We can end up, whereas we're more, you know, intrigued by not only what Jack-Jack can do, which is just like a growing list of powers, but we're also interested in how he's going to handle that. We're interested in how he's going to tackle, you know, Dash's math home. We're also interested in how, you know, Violet, that, you know, her dad essentially had her boyfriend's memory erased of her completely. So, you know, we're seeing, you know, her deal with it, and also him like being like, I screwed up, you know. So that plot thread is more interesting because that's where the meat of the story, that's where the character arc is growing, or the character arcs are growing, is these characters. Whereas Elastigirl, she gets to do really cool stuff. Like, the action scenes are some of the best I've seen all summer. But
yeah, I definitely agree with that.
But still, the more interesting is with Bob and the kids.
Yeah.
Because the Bob Odenkirk and his character and his sister is kind of, like, it's kind of predictable. We kind of know where it's going, and we know it's ending
up. The second they're introduced, yeah, you know where it's going.
And also the last time, the last movie, whenever we're introduced to a new, like, society or a new, like, corporation or big, you know, heavy, rich people, they ended up being the bad guys.
Yeah.
So it's the nature of the series that, you know, to not trust these people.
Yeah.
Or to not, like, you know, not have your guard down, no matter how well their intentions are.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was a really fun movie. I thought overall the core of exploring, you know, Bob's arc even more was a lot better. And I thought, you know, they did a really good job of handling Elastigirl's, you know, her adventure, even though, of course, it's still predictable, but still it's fun. It's fun and breezy. And like I said, it still has some of the best action scenes I've seen all summer. It was a really fun movie. I encourage people to check it out. And Dan, do you have any more non-spoilery things to say before we go into spoilers?
Well, I think that lately, like, Pixar sequels kind of have fallen off way, way more than we would expect them to, like with both Cars sequels, Finding Dory, and even to an extent, Monsters University. Like, even if you enjoy those movies, you can kind of say that they don't really need to exist. This, I would say, has an actual point to existing and, like, furthering the story of the first one. Like, it's not a Toy Story sequel, but it's probably the best non-Toy Story sequel that Pixar has done, I'd say.
Yes. Yes, indeed. I think it does, and I think, but it's necessary in that we were given a sequel setup in the first one, and now we're seeing the progression of these characters, which, to me, these are some of my favorite characters of the Pixar brand. So, that's why So I think it is necessary. And also there's more to tell with these characters. There was more to tell rather than Finding Nemo, where it's like, well, the story kind of ended when they found Nemo. Like,
yeah,
it's exactly. called Finding Nemo, and they found Nemo. And then, you know, Cars, every time they do a sequel, they just develop the world even more, and it gets more and more creepier, like unintentionally creepier. Because you're like, well, wait a minute, why is there a school bus in this world?
Oh, yeah, the bad implications of the Cars franchise are really extreme.
Yeah. It's one of the, I think Cars 2 had car death.
Yeah.
In like a G-rated movie, like what? It's like, you know, like, know you love Cars and you love the old country, but this is really creepy.
Yeah,
where did all the people go? Like, what happened? But yeah, I thought. You mentioned Monsters University, which I was like, I think it's actually a really good movie. No, I think the problem is
it's just unnecessary.
Yeah, it is completely unnecessary. I still recommend it, but it is completely unnecessary. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know, after the Gold Standard, they had Brave, which I was not really that into. But they kept making more good movies. They've had Coco and Pete Doctor's Inside Out. So
don't skip over the fact that they made The Good Dinosaur. So, might be the worst modern animation film.
Oh God, I forgot.
I forgot
they did that. It's beautiful to look at, but it's boring as hell.
Yeah.
Like it's the most simple. Like, it's the most simple, most, like, okay, it's, you know, a boy and his dog, just, like, role reversal.
Yeah.
Like, the boy's the dog and the dinosaur's the boy. So, it's so odd. That movie, or I shouldn't say odd, because that would mean it was actually interesting. But no, it's Good Dinosaur. Yeah, I always forget that's the one in their category, and that was the one at the time when I was in like starting in college. I was like, that's the one that's gonna be exciting, you know? They're gonna Pixar's going to the prehistoric time, telling a story. No, we're doing a dinosaur story about farming.
Yeah. Well, anyway, this isn't the Good Dinosaur podcast, so when you say we get into some spoilers for Incredibles 2.
All right. So, starting with you, what did you think of the reveal of Screenslaver?
I was very glad that it wasn't Winston who was the Screenslaver and that it was his sister.
I think it would have been too too predictable if it was.
Mm-hmm.
But there were so many points where I was like, please just not be both of them.
Yeah.
Like, please, like, it's just too on the nose. Like, and at certain points, you know, there's a speech that Screenslaver has while Elastigirl is like tracking him down.
Yeah.
That's very like, you know, you rely on your screens and you rely too much on heroes and what blah 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 blah. And I was actually like, okay, maybe it is probably someone that's just, you know, a random Joe that just, you know, kind of like against superheroes coming back. You know, and then the reveal happens, and then it's explained why Winston's sister doesn't want the superheroes, and I find it quite dumb. Like, it's kind of I kind of find the reasoning, the logic behind it a little, like, convoluted.
Weak. Yes.
Yeah, it's weak and convoluted. because it's like, you're angry at superheroes because your dad was an idiot.
Yeah.
Really? No, your dad was just an idiot. There's a panic room and he didn't want to go because he thought his friends, he thought, like, you know, as a 5-year-old would.
Yeah.
Like someone would come and save him. No, your dad was just an idiot.
Yeah.
You know, and Winston's actually doing a good thing here because, you know, if the heroes are alive, then you know what? Maybe it could have happened. Maybe some other poor dad could be saved. Your reasoning is super weak. And also, why would you have this whole, like, train escapade or the monorail escapade and have it be so successful.
Yeah.
If you wanted these heroes to fail.
She's two steps away from twirling a mustache. Like a villain of that caliber.
She is. She's almost as bad as Bond. She's almost at that point. And so, you know, I mean, it's not as bad of a villain problem as some of, like, the Marvel villains have had.
Yeah.
Or some of the villains that Marvel have had, but it's still one of those where you're just like, okay, maybe this is the one, maybe this is the day when Brad Bird thought it up, he was just like, F it, we'll just put it in there.
It's especially
just put something in there.
It's especially disheartening that the villain is so weak in this one, because Syndrome in the first one is one of my favorite superhero movie villains, period. Not just animated, like, overall, Syndrome's a great villain and has a lot of depth and a plan that actually makes sense.
Yeah, it'll thought out, and also, like, it works in today. It's not like, oh, you know, it's, you know, a villain of its time. No, it's actually... it's more relevant today than it was back in 2004.
Yeah.
Like, because Syndrome is nothing more but an angry fanboy who got disowned or left, you know, his fandom behind because it didn't live up to his expectations.
Syndrome is behind the Last Jedi remake fan account.
Oh my God. He's funding the whole movie. You know what? Let them remake it. That's what I say. Let them get sued and then we'll hear and then we'll have an interesting court case about fan films, because that's what it literally will be.
Yeah.
So you know what, let them. I'm sorry, Ryan Johnson, I'm sorry everybody, but just know in your heart, Ryan Johnson, you made a good movie. That's all there's to it. You made a really good movie. You have nothing to be ashamed of.
Absolutely.
In fact, your production is still the only Star Wars production that went well. So there. That's how you know it. That's how you know you're still the best. But yeah, not to get on. But yeah, so and that's why it is so disappointing that, and I can't even remember her name. What was her name again?
Who?
The villain for this movie.
Evelyn. Evelyn Dever. Yeah, I got the Wikipedia page up right now. That's the only reason I remember it.
Great, because my internet's going slow. But yeah, so Evelyn is weak because of her motivation, and also her actions don't line up exactly as well as it should. So with that in mind, it's still. It's weak in comparison to Syndrome, where Syndrome was very calculated. It was very, like, everything Syndrome did was for a reason. Like, he didn't just come up with something and then be a totally different character later.
Yeah. Although, like, this is going to sound weird. Can I say this? It's weird because I think that Evelyn has the worst writing of any of the major characters, but I also think that Catherine Keener gives the best voice acting performance in the film.
This is true. Like, she adds a lot of, you know, she adds a lot of the spunk and a lot of the, you know, the punkness of Evelyn. If I'm in the same ballpark of that, like, she adds, like, you, like, when you see her character, the voice matches up perfectly.
Yeah.
I mean, and everyone else's voice does match. Like, you, like, it's all reasonable. Like, it's all very well done. Like, you believe Craig Nelson is Bob Parr. Like, you get, like, you believe it. But still, it's, you know, but yeah, I would say, like, that's the perfect voice for Evelyn, and it's perfectly menacing, too. And also, again, this is like what the second Keener has played a character where she hypnotizes people. She must really want to hypnotize people.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was really the big thing of Incredibles 2 that I thought was just weak. because everything else worked very well. I thought the visual design of The Incredibles is a step up from the first movie, because the first movie, while it does look really good with that 1950s Art Deco look, it still, they improve. You can tell the animation has improved in the last 14 years because of how much color they're able to add in. Yeah, and they were able to add all that in and improve it over time. And I thought, man, and even the house they're in looks fantastic. The house that Wesley loans them is fantastic.
Yes.
So Incredibles has this like deep theme of, you know, you have to find it within yourself, and you have to work on it, because the thing with Syndrome was he has like a special gift in that he can make these incredible inventions, like rocket boots. Like, dude, you made rocket boots. Why are you trying so hard to be a superhero? you are a genius. Like, you are a superhero on your own. Like, you have to find the superhero in you, and not get carried away in what the world thinks of you in that way.
Yeah.
Whereas Incredibles 2, I'm still trying to find what the meaning is. Do you have a theory on what the idea of Incredibles 2 is?
I'm not someone who can usually picks up on the thematics immediately on the first watch. I usually take two watches. The first watch, I'm only following the plot. The second time, I'm paying more attention to the themes. So no, I haven't formulated anything yet.
Because I'm still trying to figure it out. Because on one hand, you know, I thought the movie was going to be about, you know, maybe the over-reliance of superheroes is bad and we should just concern ourselves with just protecting each other. But then, of course, that's basically the villain's whole ideology is. Yeah. And normally when you have the ideology spout out by the villain, it's usually as a writer and director, you spout it as wrong. So I don't think there was that much of a deeper meaning, as much as, you know, this is just a second movie of having fun. And really, if it was a deeper meaning, it was for Bob himself to realize that your ego is not your ego, and your compulsive need to save the world is nowhere near as exciting or incredible as being a good dad.
Yeah.
And I think that's really the only big takeaway I have of Incredibles 2. And it's a good takeaway, but I find Incredibles 1 more, you know, thematically rich.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that.
Mm-hmm. So, what'd you think of Edna in this movie?
Edna and Frozone, both underused.
They are, but they do still serve a plot. They serve enough
of a purpose, but they're not in it enough. Like, just as a subjective thing, like, just because I want to see those characters a lot more, I feel like I've been gypped with that. Which is no fault.
Also, I'm curious.
There's no place to really put them in the story more, but it's just like a fan thing.
Well, yeah. I mean, what could you do with Edna? She just basically is the costume designer.
Yeah, you can't really do more, but.
But yeah, I understand the need for more Frozone. Like, Frozone could probably just be in maybe a scene or two more of, like, Bob, like, you know, needing, like, a babysitter while he goes and, like, you know, screams and cries or something. I don't know. But, yeah. And the other thing I wanted to mention is, if I was 10 years old, I would love this movie because the kids are actually the ones that have to save the parents. Like, they have to save the parents from screen slavers' device.
Yeah.
Hypnotizing device. So So, yeah, 10-year-old me would have definitely loved that part because it's fun to see kids fight bad guys.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. Do we have any more thoughts on Incredibles 2?
There's a character in like the boardroom of other superheroes. I don't know what the character's name is or who voices him, but he has electricity powers and he looks like Timothy Chalamet. And that is my last takeaway.
I have no idea either. It's not Void, right?
No, Void looks like Jenna Malone.
Yeah, I don't know who that is. I wish I did.
Electrics. Electrics is voiced by Phil Lamar from Samurai Jack.
Oh, okay. All right. And yeah, I like the new characters, Void and Electrics and Krishara.
Yeah.
I like these new characters. I wonder if they'll be in it more. My final takeaway with Incredibles is that I hope that the third movie comes quicker than 14 years.
Yeah.
I hope it does, because I think the thing about the Incredibles franchise is it's not like the Toy Story experiment where we can make one every 10 years or so and kind of see how everyone's doing. That's not, yeah. I don't think it's that at all, or I don't think it's necessary to do one every 10 years to kind of check in on the kids that are currently with, you know, Woody and Buzz and whatnot. I think this could easily just be like another car situation where, or similarly structured in releasing like cars, like let's just release one every like few years.
Yeah.
Although I doubt we'll get another Cars movie soon, because the last one did not do as well at the box office.
It also was not good.
So, yeah. But that's the Cars sequels for you.
That's the entire Cars trilogy.
Yeah. There's worse franchises, but still, Cars. Let it go, Pixar. Let it go. But yeah, my final takeaway is Incredibles 2 is a worthy sequel of its first movie because it sticks to the style, it sticks to the characters' motivations, it doesn't change enough of the characters to where it's out of place, but it takes the characters to new places to where it's interesting and more compelling. Yes, the villain is not as interesting as Syndrome, but I think it still works in the confines. It still is a good enough plot device for the second movie.
Yeah, I would agree.
Brad Bird, you know how to create. You know how to create a third act, and this one was incredible with like the ship running. Like, I love how Brad Bird ends his like action scenes, like final action scenes, and they all end like. It was just in the nick of time. Like, you feel it.
Yeah.
Like I love how like they're turning the ship and they're turning it, and Frozone is like creating this like, you know, snow like sled up to the you know ship in the parking lot that will, you know, stop the ship from causing collateral damage. It's in like just in the nick of time. Like, I love how Brad Bird designs that creates that. So, but yeah, I thought Incredibles 2 was really good. Really good Pixar movie. I can't wait for Toy Story 4.
Oof.
Where again our childhood is being played on. Yeah. Well, at least John Lasseter's not directing it.
Yeah, that's a major plus.
Yeah. So Dan, before we go, do you have any more thoughts on Pixar?
they should go back to creating original films exclusively. Because of the last few Pixar releases, I would say that both Inside Out and Coco are stronger than any of the pre-existing IP that they've put out. So while I really liked Incredibles 2, I want them to go back to doing original stuff.
I agree, but we still got to be careful because we know that even when they make an original movie, they can still churn out a good dinosaur. So, make more original movies because Inside Out and Coco, they're more visually dynamic, and also their stories are just much better. And also their stories are much more interesting because one's from the inside of a little girl dealing with her emotions, and the other is a little Mexican kid, finding out more of his family heritage through Dia de los Muertos. Can't speak today. Those are more interesting than what's happening with Lightning McQueen and his legacy, or what's happening with, or did we find out where Dory came from? I would even maybe argue, and I know this sounds like it sounds, those ideas sound a lot more interesting than what's happening with The Incredibles. So I love the Pixar original stuff, for the exception of Good Dinosaur. So I think that is it for the Incredibles podcast. Dan, where can the good people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Soderbergian, and you can find me on Letterboxd at D Daugherty Films.
All right, you can find me on Twitter at MovieKale, and you can also follow the podcast at The Youth Critic, and you can also follow the channel that distributes this podcast at KHC Network. Thanks, everyone. We will be back with you very soon with Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom.
Bye, sweetie.
I'll watch the kids, no problem.
That's not the way you're supposed to do it, Dad. They want us to do it this way.
I don't know that way. Why would they change math? Math is math.
Okay,
math,
Dad.
Is math.
Hello?
Hey, honey.
How are the kids?
Everything's great.
Is she having adolescence?
And Jack?
He's in excellent health.
Whoa, what the?
Num Num Cookie.
Oh, my God.
Cookie.
Wow, gay. That is freaky.
You know what's crazy, right? To help my family, I gotta leave it. To fix the law, I gotta break it.
You've got to, so our kids can have that choice.
Thank you, young man.
Combustion imminent? What does that mean?
Ah! It means fire, Robert.
The Scream Slayer interrupts this program for an important announcement.
Suit up. It might get weird.
I'll be there ASAP.
Where you going ASAP? You better be back ASAP.